Gospel of Mark, chapter 9, verses 38 through 50. Mark 9, 38 through 50. Follow along or just listen for the word of the Lord in these words. John said to him, that's Jesus. John said to Jesus, "Teacher, we saw someone casting out demons in your name, and we tried to stop him because he was not following us." But Jesus said, "Do not stop him, for no one does a good deed of power. No one who does a good deed of power in my name shall be able soon afterward to speak ill of me. Whoever is not against us is for us. For truly I tell you, whoever gives a cup of water to drink because you bear the name of Christ will by no means lose the reward. If any of you put a stumbling block before one of these little ones who believe in me, it would be better for you if a great millstone were hung around your neck and you were thrown into the sea. If your hand causes you to stumble, remove it, for it's better for you to enter life maimed than to have two hands and go to hell, to the unquenchable fire. And if your foot causes you to stumble, then cut it off, because it's better for you to enter life lame than to have 2 feet and be thrown into the fire. And if your eye causes you to stumble, then tear it out. It's better for you to enter the kingdom of God with one eye than to have 2 eyes and be thrown into the fire, where the worm never dies and the fire is never quenched. For everyone will be salted with fire. Salt is good, but if the salt has lost its saltiness, then how can you season it? Have salt in yourselves and be at peace with one another." This, brothers and sisters, is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Hard word. Hard word to hear, hard word to preach. But I did a little research on the word for hell in the New Testament. At least in this spot, it is the word Gehenna. And there's a whole history of kind of a mythology behind that word. But the very practical use of it in Jerusalem at the time of Jesus was that it was the garbage dump where they took everything that they didn't need and needed to get rid of. And it was burned there. And pretty much at that spot called, in Hebrew, Gehenna, it pretty much at that spot, there was always a fire going on. And Jesus often talked about that and probably gestured toward it as a way of talking about how everything that is worthless, everything that is without cause, without purpose, everything that is offensive and harsh and hard to conscience is going to be gone there and be destroyed in a place that burns and never stops. So you work that in to however you understand the afterlife, but I'm afraid that some of our mythologies about heaven and hell, you know, singing angels and harps and all, and such a place as we might imagine for that is constantly filled with flames, are images of promise and hope on one hand and of eternal suffering on the other hand. And I caution us to try to stick with Scripture as we understand the realities of these things. They are consequences. And they're not just consequences in the afterlife, after we die, but they are consequences of our contentment and happiness and good health now versus our possibility of suffering now. And so I think that heaven and hell are realities that we already can experience. And of course, we want to be led into the place where God is our Redeemer and that we constantly affirm that, and where we worship God, and where we are drawn into that place of health and hope and happiness and dwelling with God, and avoid the places where the rug is drawn out from under us and we fall and fail and are miserable. I don't mean to completely demythologize heaven and hell. I'm not working on a theological agenda here, other than to say that they are realities even now in our own lives. And as we go through our lives, we need to find ways to seek out heavenly things, to seek out hope and help, and to avoid conflict and strife and underhanded backbiting and those things that cause suffering in our world. Some people are really good at causing suffering. You know, I know that psychologies are different and that some of us like to be peacemakers. That would be me. Sometimes that's not the healthiest approach. I may cut short a struggle that needs to happen for growth, for the sake of growth and change. But there are also people in the world that like to work for conflict and keep things stirred up. You know that too. You've seen them. You're smiling. You know, probably someone in your circle of friends or even in your family that you know of that's like that. But I'd like to share with you good news this morning that just one person armed with the gospel of peace can change the world. Telemachus did. Telemachus was a monk who lived in the 5th century. He felt God saying to him, go to Rome. And you know what he did? He lived his life mostly in a cloistered monastery. But when he heard God saying, go to Rome, he put all his possessions in a small sack and he went to Rome. And when he arrived in the city, the people were thronging in the streets. He asked why all the excitement, and he was told that this was the day that the gladiators would be fighting in the Colosseum. The day of the games, the circus, they called it. And he thought to himself, 4 centuries after Christ, and they are still killing each other and killing the Christians for enjoyment. He ran to the Colosseum and he heard the gladiators saying, hail to Caesar, we die for Caesar. And he thought, this isn't right. He jumped over the railing and went out to the middle of the field. And he got between 2 gladiators and he tried to stop them. The crowd became enraged. And some of them came onto the field and stoned the peacemaker to death. When the emperor of Rome, named Honorius, heard about that monk, he declared him a Christian martyr and he put an end to the games. Legend has it that the very last gladiator game was the one in which Telemachus died. So even though he died for a cause. He died for good. Jesus calls us to follow him, even all the way to the cross, which means that we could be called to die for him. Not many of us will be called to that extreme witness of faith. But you have to be open to it. And if God says go, go. But thankfully, there are so many simpler ways that we can serve. Jesus said, you are the salt of the earth. Be at peace with each other. Sometimes we're called to be peacemakers, and sometimes it's costly. On the other hand, sometimes we're called to stir things up that need to be fixed. We, you and I, the church, are called to make a difference in the world, to be light and salt, to light dark corners and make a difference, to shake things up a notch, to spice things up a bit. As you've heard one of our TV chefs say, take it up a notch. But salt isn't very good by itself. You've tasted salt. It's not meant to be a taste. It's meant to enhance the taste of food's natural properties, to bring out the best in it. So it's a wonderful image to think that Christian people should be salt in the world. Not that we're making ourselves the target, not that we're the ones standing in the middle of the Colosseum, but that we are the ones who change things and make a difference for Christ in the world. Salt has a lot in common with light. As we've said, salt is not meant to be an end in itself. It's meant to be an agent that changes things. It's the same thing with light. It's not surprising that Jesus said, "You are the salt of the earth. You're the light. I am the light of the world, and you're called to reflect that light." A light is given not to look at, but to see by. If you look at the light, it just makes your pupils close and you can't see much very, very well at all. But if you use the light to illuminate the thing that you're trying to look at, like music on a music stand, which, by the way, wasn't great over there. If you use the light to look at something you want to see well, the light illumines it. And so as people of faith called to be salt and light in the world, in the tradition of Jesus, we are called to illumine things and to spice things up. Think of a flashlight by the campfire. When everything is dark around you, the light is not much good if you shine it in your face. It sort of blinds you. But you stay in the dark and you shine the light and illumine what it is that you want to see. Another object. When Jesus said that you are salt and light, He didn't mean to change your DNA or your chemistry, but He meant to change our behavior, changing our function or the results that we get. He meant Christians should make a difference in the world, not just worship, but work. Turn our worship inside out so that we work in the world to improve things. I've got good news, and most of you know it. We do that. We're working in the world. We are making a difference in people's lives. We need to do more of that. And if you're not involved in that, then find your place and get on the wagon to be involved in that. Jesus meant that Christians should make a difference in the world. Like light illumines an object, like salt seasons and wakes up the flavors in our food. An ancient king once asked his three daughters how much they loved him. One daughter said that she believed she loved him more than all the gold in the world. And one said she loved him more than all the silver in the world. That sounds like they were a little competitive there. The youngest daughter said that she loved him more than salt. The king wasn't pleased with that answer. But the cook overheard the conversation. So the next day he prepared a meal for the king, but he left out any trace of salt. The food tasted horrible. Not like what the king was used to eating. In fact, he refused it. He wouldn't eat it. And when it was explained to him, he began to understand what his daughter meant. He understood the value of salt to bring out the best in someone else or in something else. In the ancient world, salt was valuable. It was a commodity that was highly traded. It was used as currency in some countries, even to the modern times. And during an invasion of Ethiopia in the late 19th century, Italian soldiers found blocks of salt stored in bank vaults, along with other familiar forms of currency. Jesus was paying his disciples and us a compliment when he called us the salt of the earth. But he really wasn't calling us salt as much as he was calling us to be salt and to do what salt does. to season and to bring out the best, to look for the best in people, to find hope where it seems like there isn't much hope. Jesus was fond of the two images that we've been talking about, of light and salt. But I think we're sticking with salt this morning. He said we're the light of the world, but I really like the salt imagery. Not many people like how salt tastes, but we like how it makes other things taste. Being salt in the earth can sometimes be a challenge because it can get you in trouble. And it can cause problems. But it also is an important symbol and metaphor for thinking of how we are to act in the world. I'd like for you to think not so much of being salt, but of functioning like salt does. To bring change, to pray with people, to bring hope where it seems there is none, to sing with those who are cheerful, and to pray a prayer of faith with those who are sick, that the Lord will raise them up. That's what it means to be salt. It's changing the score. It's making a difference. William Barclay is a British theologian who tells this story in a comment on a biblical text. He told a story about someone changing signs. That is an intersection of the road. One sign would point to the city of Seattle and another would point to the city of Tacoma. And the boy would wonder to himself, how many people would I send down the wrong road if I changed the signs? Your very life is a sign post with a sign on it. I'd like to invite you to think what road you are sending people down. If someone were to follow you, or me, where would that get them? If someone were to take steps in your tracks, where would they end up? Do you send travelers the right way and at least warn them if there's a sign that says road enters water? Next Sunday, October 4th, is World Communion Sunday. We come to the Sacrament of Holy Communion every hour of the day with Christians around the globe. Places of hope and persecution, places of joy and horror. But in every place, hope can be found in Jesus Christ. Where can you give a cup of water in the Master's name? What will you offer Christ? You may not be called to fight off gladiators, but you might be. What will it cost you to offer your life for Christ? Giving up your life can mean finding it. Finding your calling, your place of ministry. Being salt and light makes a difference. Giving up your life doesn't have to mean dying. Perhaps it means living in a new way that makes more of a difference. A simple cup of water. Of course, being followers of Jesus, we give ourselves to Him. We have to be willing to turn our life over to Him, to give up the very gift of life, to die for Him if we must, but also to give up our living. In other words, to live for Him. That's what it means to be salt and light. Is today the day for you to come to Christ and offer what you have, what you can bring? Is today the day for you to come and jump in to the water? I look forward to seeing you in church Wednesday and Sunday.